Hello, I'm Portia Young. Welcome to Beyond Sherman Park, a special one-hour edition of 1036 here on Milwaukee PBS and simulcast on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, 89.7 FM. This program is coming to you from Park Lawn Assembly of God in the heart of Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood. We have gathered Milwaukee area residents as well as community and government leaders to help us talk about some of the issues that may have led to the frustration and violence last August 13th here in Sherman Park. More importantly, we want to focus on the present and the future. Over the next hour, we'll talk about what's changed in a year and what social and economic issues prevail not only here in Sherman Park, but beyond in other neighborhoods. We'll look at some of the positive efforts to help improve the lives of young people and our families. And we'll extend the community conversation to our audience members here at Park Lawn. You'll have a chance to voice their thoughts and concerns about police relations, community pride, housing, education, employment, and a whole host of other issues. We begin, though, with a closer look at this diverse community called Sherman Park. 1036's Mark Segris talks with residents who are committed to calling this community home.
The act of Havdalah, separation is central.
Harriet McKinney and her husband, Rabbi Steve Mandelman, reflect on the heart and soul of their longtime neighborhood, Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood.
I don't see any, maybe there's one or two, but I don't see any for sale houses. I don't see any deep divides in the community. I've certainly had nothing but good relations with my neighbors.
I see Jews walk by. I see people of African heritage walk by. I see families walk by. I see LGBTQ couples walk by. I see everyone.
Religious and cultural diversity is apparent when gazing from their window and among the artifacts and family photos in their home. Walking to services at nearby Congregation Beth Yehuda is a chance to mingle. The journey among friends is as important as the destination.
Here in Sherman Park, the silos get broken down.
Back in the turn of the century, the landscape here was rural, eventually settled and built by Milwaukee professionals, mainly German-American, looking for greener pastures. Craftsmanship and architecture is exceptional. In the ensuing decades, a variety of ethnic families migrated to the near northwest side. During the open housing movement, Sherman Park leadership was instrumental in attracting African-American neighbors and continued to build a reputation as a progressive face of Milwaukee. But as a variety of social economic issues were bubbling in the city, parts of Sherman Park were also feeling the pressure. On August 13, 2016, a fatal encounter between 23-year-old Sylville Smith and Milwaukee police triggered a violent neighborhood outcry. Though confined and limited, the images of burning and looting went global.
And just like that, Sherman Park neighborhood's public image changed overnight.
Dr. Ken Harris Jr., a retired Milwaukee police officer, media professional, and Sherman Park resident, has an eye for scenery, and he's using it to capture another image of this part of town. The ongoing photo presentation is called Spotlight on Sherman, images of the neighborhood's art, architecture, and people, a collaborative effort with Sally Media Group.
What we really wanted to show is the uniqueness of Sherman Park, that in few cities, even being from Chicago, there are few cities that have such a rich, diverse neighborhood like Sherman Park.
Dr. Harris Jr. plans a series of showings about town, perhaps even a book and documentary to better illustrate his favorite place called home.
I think that people here are now working towards not necessarily changing the way that they were seen, but enhancing what they already are.
Sherman Park is in a time of healing. Remnants of last summer's uprising are being replaced with a changing landscape. But healing of the human spirit comes with more time.
1 year ago, the morning after the police-related shooting and civil unrest, the senior pastor at a Sherman Park anchor church raised a very important question.
All eyes are on our city. We have been infamously noted as having the worst zip code in the nation, 53206, for the racial and economic and social and criminal disparities. What are we going to do?
Bishop Harvey's words, "What are we going to do?" certainly sets the tone for our discussion. In fact, just days after the unrest last August, Milwaukee PBS and our partners at WUWM produced a program to reflect on living in Sherman Park and how to help move this neighborhood and our city forward. Let's listen to what was said 1 year ago.
We're joined now in the studio by three people with a couple of things in common. They care a great deal about the future of Sherman Park and the city as a whole, and they've written eloquently about it in the past week.
No downtrodden community in history has healed itself alone. All of the devastating statistical evidence points to a community that is hurting. This is how they cry out for help. It may seem irrational to many inside and outside the community. If it allows people to see the pain more clearly, perhaps it was worthwhile. If the city takes corrective actions to improve the lives of its African-American citizens, as the Kerner Commission recommended 49 years ago, it will be considered progress. Resolving these issues will take time, passion, energy, sympathy, empathy, and a tremendous amount of compassion and hard work.
10 years ago, I began an unlikely friendship. I'd like to tell you about my friend because I've never met anyone like her. My friend is Sherman Park. And I say this to you now, Sherman Park, I hear you. I'm not going to insult your intelligence by coming at you with quick and simple answers to your complex questions. I'm not going to sit inside my home only to watch your story unfold on Twitter, the news, or Facebook. I am going to walk with you in this, and I am going to serve you while you struggle.
We invited some of those same panelists to join us again as we look back and look ahead. WUWM reporter LaToya Dennis, who was part of that original program, joins us now to lead this discussion. LaToya?
Thank you, Portia. I want to start by introducing our panelists. First, we have veteran Milwaukee reporter and contributor to Milwaukee PBS, James Causey. Reggie Jackson from the Dr. James Cameron Legacy Foundation. And Sherman Park resident and blogger Laura Marshall. Thank you all for joining us this evening. And we're going to jump right into questions. And Reggie, I'm going to start with you. I guess I want to ask, what's changed in Sherman Park for better or worse?
Well, one of the positive changes that I've seen is that there are conversations that are being held now that weren't being held prior to the events in Sherman Park last year. I think more people are engaged in these types of conversations about the struggles that the city of Milwaukee has, because what happened in Sherman Park was really a Milwaukee issue. You know, many parts of Milwaukee were affected by it. And one of the things I think that is really, really very heartwarming for me to see is that young people in particular are becoming part of that conversation for the first time. We typically tend to not listen to the voices of younger residents, but when we look back at the footage of what happened last year, we see a lot of young people were involved in that. So I'm very happy that their voices are finally being heard for the first time.
And Laura, what about you? What have you seen, better or worse?
I think that Milwaukee wants to know what kind of help is the most helpful. I think that's why we're having this panel tonight. I think that the city wants to ask Sherman Park, what can we do? And because Sherman Park is a big neighborhood, it's a diverse neighborhood, we're going to have so many different answers over what kind of help is the most helpful kind. There's so many things that need to be addressed. There's loss of jobs. We need more stable homeowners. We need trust to be built again between the police and the community. And we're not going to agree. But the bigger question, I think, is what is already true about Sherman Park and what needs to be true about Sherman Park in order for this type of investment to come here and to be sustainable here. But I think that the city of Milwaukee needs to be reminded that Sherman Park is not a smudge on its existence. It's a jewel in the crown of Milwaukee. We are Milwaukee's most established, most diverse, most integrated neighborhood in a city that has been segregated historically for many, many years. So if we are that neighborhood, and if we are here and committed already, and if Milwaukee is poised and wants to be an urban area that is able to attract and retain talented, diverse people, then it's going to have to make significant investments in the diversity that's already here. And that means Sherman Park. Because as I see it, in the way that Sherman Park goes, so will Milwaukee go.
James, what do you think?
Well, if this conversation is talking about beyond Sherman Park, let's look beyond Sherman Park. I still think that we have a long ways to go. I mean, I think when you look at the state of how some African Americans still can't find work, how our young people still struggle every day, how we still lead the country in a number of negative statistics, I don't think enough is being done. So when you talk about Sherman Park, we could talk about Sherman Park, but this is a citywide issue. And when you talk about the citywide issue and how African Americans and whites, the gap is so wide and nothing has been done, in my opinion, to close that gap, I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we have more uprising, because people are not listening to the people who are struggling every day.
Now, you say nothing has been done. I'm wondering, Reggie, if you think you've seen any movement across the city to help with some of those issues.
Well, you know, one of the things that we find when events like this happen, what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, Baltimore, what happened in Milwaukee in 1967, Detroit in 67 Watts, all of these events that happen, I was living in Los Angeles when the Rodney King eruption took place. And there were a lot of conversations afterwards, you know, for several years. And I agree with what James is saying, is that we have a lot of conversations about the changes, but we don't recognize that we want to fix things quickly that have taken decades to create. So you have these decades of segregation in the city of Milwaukee that have created a great deal of division within the city. You had the loss of manufacturing jobs, which devastated, you know, many parts of the central city, which we're still struggling to kind of find how we get past that. And we celebrate, you know, the 50th anniversary of the open housing marches coming up very soon. But what we don't recognize is if we look back, say, 7 years after the open housing marches, I found a study that showed that segregation still wasn't occurring on the south side of Milwaukee. So it's an ongoing issue, but we have to actually take concrete steps and not just have conversations about it.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for your insights. Portia?
All right. Thank you. Thank you to our panel. You know, there's been a great deal of talk about police relations in our city and the use of force in many situations. James Causey from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talked with Milwaukee Police Chief Ed Flynn. Let's listen.
Police Chief Edward Flynn believes that the Sherman Park unrest last year was not an isolated flare-up. It is part of an historical pattern.
Every one of the great riots of the 60s, whether it was Watts in Los Angeles, Newark, Detroit, or the many other lesser disturbances, the flashpoint was almost inevitably a police action. But according to the authors of the report, it wasn't the fundamental cause of the conflagration, that there were significant overlays of social challenge, failure, government ineptitude, economic dislocation, et cetera, that created communities that felt disconnected from the mainstream, that felt unrepresented, that felt left behind by the American dream that everybody shared.
He believes the community frustration is not just towards the police department.
I think people expect the criminal justice system to make up for the fact that for too many years, police agencies, when the verdict came out, said, okay, well, that's over, and they put somebody back to work, mm-hmm. Okay? The reason often there isn't a conviction, from the most general rule, is the law does offer certain enhanced protections to police officers using force under the color of office, okay? And the reason they do that is the same reason that we don't charge every soldier in Afghanistan who has a friendly fire incident or accidentally drops the artillery rounds on the wrong village and kills innocent. We don't charge them all with war crimes. Their careers are over, okay? People make amends, our government makes amends to the village, but we recognize that in the fog of war, so to speak, some right, there's times there's downright incompetence, sometimes there's just good faith error and mistake, but the levels of proof, you know, to prove intent to commit a crime for an officer in a circumstance like that, it's a higher bar. Sometimes criminal culpability is exactly the right place to go. There are some egregious actions that are clearly a crime. But in many others, the level of proof required is more than for you or me off duty or you getting in an argument with some guy in a bar. It's a different standard of proof because it recognizes that we empower this one group of people to use deadly force in society. And it is inevitable that they're not always going to be right, all right? And so then the question is, what requires a criminal determination as opposed to a civil liability or you should be fired? And I think our profession needs to do a better job of holding people accountable for incompetence. And if we've been doing that for the last 50 years, there might not be all this frustration with the criminal justice system because it would be clearly trying folks, I think, that more obviously were outside the bounds of legality and competence.
What's the makeup of the police department? What percentage of the police department is African American?
I would say right now it's somewhere in the order of a quarter, about 25% of the department. I think there's another, 15 or 18% Hispanic. So the overall minority representation is increasing. I would say that in recent years, the Hispanic representation has been increasing faster than the African American. I mean, ironically, we've probably got more African Americans in senior levels than we have had in decades, but incoming, we're having difficulty.
Why is that?
I think it's a combination of factors. First of all, for those who have solid educational backgrounds, there are an array, not black, white, or Hispanic, there are array of opportunities that don't require you to work nights, weekends, and wear body armor. The other issue, I think, is not dissimilar from the era when I entered policing, which is in the very communities whose representation is most needed, there are strong mixed feelings about sending their sons and daughters into this world at this moment, okay? That there is this ambivalence that on the one hand, everybody understands they need quality policing, but for the young men and women in that recruiting era, the message they're getting is largely negative from even their own community leaders, okay? In some ways, policing becomes yet another wedge issue.
You can hear the complete interview with Chief Ed Flynn online at milwaukeepbs.org. James Causey speaks with several other local state leaders. That's coming up later in the program. Right now, though, the relationship between police and kids and young adults is often at the core of some of the frustration and the violence that occurs. Just before the unrest last August, two people did something about the already built-up tensions. Vaughn Mays and Gabby Taylor tell 1036's Amanda Roslansky how their frame of mind is making a difference.
Y'all ready to have a water balloon fight? Make sure y'all come over here and sign in because we're gonna do it real quick.
We started programming the parks pretty much because I have another company that I started called We All We Got MKE. You know, just policing the police, helping businesses, helping individuals with different issues they may have in the community. Facebook, we saw a video of the police kicking the kids out of this park.
Out of Sherman Park.
So, and the response we got back from the community was that the police had the right and they should have kicked all the kids out of the park. The kids were up here constantly every day having fights. There were robberies, there were shootings, people were getting jumped, tased, all that kind of stuff. So, and from there we saw the need to be up here constantly every day just to make sure the space was safe.
I just kept hearing, it was a big old sign up that said program the park. These people walk around saying they was violence free people, like to stop the violence in the parks and stuff. And then I just asked, can I be a part of it? So I was the first one to actually be a part of it. So now all I do is I just go around talking to other people, telling them about it and stuff. They do help get jobs. They help you, like, personal problems. They there if you need somebody to talk to. They just like another family, basically.
Sure, you have community people, you know, to get, I mean, out here. You don't have to have a title to help.
Our first few days up here, like, we were patrolling, we were just walking around, observing them, and we started hearing them shouting out stuff. If you come up here, I'm gonna beat his ass, or I can't wait to see her, or I'm hungry, you know? So we started hearing that, and we was taking it like, okay, maybe that has something to do with what's going on up here.
More usual, are referred to as the program that services people that fall in the cracks. So for existing programs such as the Boys and Girls Club, all these different traditional organizations or organizations that were already established, they don't reach a lot of kids and a lot of adults. So we get the people that don't necessarily fit into any of those programs or that won't go into any of those programs. The activities are the front for what we do. That's the face of it. That's not the root of what we actually do. The root of what we actually do is sit down and actually address people's issues to why you need food, why you need money, why you need these things, and address that. That way, get someone a job who doesn't have a job. If we show a person who is hungry how to get their food for themselves, how to grow food or whatever the case may be, we're actually fixing the problem, the direct problem to why they need the service in the first place, which is why our program is a lot different from most other programs.
You see all the joyness right here? Look all that. That's what we need more in the community. We don't need to be fighting, no violence, no guns, no nothing. Just like peace and quiet, having fun, everybody running around, tag.
That is what we need more of. It's time now to hear what our audience here at Parklawn has to say about policing and police relations and community pride. Our journalists, James Causey and Latoya Dennis, are on each of the aisles here at Parklawn with microphones in hand to help facilitate these community conversations. Please keep your comments and questions brief and focused on the topics at hand. Latoya, we'll start with you.
And since we had Von Mays and Gabby Taylor in the audience, that we thought it would be perfect to invite them up and just ask you guys, what's been the impact of Program the Parks thus far?
I think we've made a lot of progress since last year. I know particularly dealing with law enforcement, there was a high need for them to be in that area. A lot of calls that they complained about having to be there all day. We took them calls down. I believe we had a great impact on the crime, specifically in the park and then outwards into the area. We got a lot of kids employed. We got a lot of kids back in school, back at home if there were runaways or, you know, got them services. So we alleviated a lot of the things that were going on last year.
Do you want to add anything?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Please state your name for me and tell me where you're from.
My name's Kendall Allen. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And you have a question?
Yes, I do. My question is, there are a lot of resources here in Milwaukee. I used to live on 27th Hour for about, 15 years. And my thing is, there's jobs, there's, schools, there's after-school programs. But what I realized was, as when I walked through the communities, there's different community resources in their own community. So how can people actually share the resources if everyone got different resources? So can we all just come together, bring our resources, not just in the Amani neighborhood, but in every community neighborhood, and actually come up with a way of, feeding us knowledge, education, apprenticeships, scholarships, and give us the financial literacy education that we need together instead of separate, because it's just not working that way.
Good question. Who would like to take that? The question is, what could be done to share resources so we get the most impact to help people?
I'm not a professional in this area. Okay. I don't have, this is what I will say, is as a result of Seville's shooting, as a result of all of the different services that are needed in Sherman Park, I've seen many, many organizations pop up, and everybody, kind of harkening back to what I said before, everybody thinks that this is the right way to do it. And it's not misled, it's not uninformed, because they do think that their way is the best way. I agree with you. I think that I learned today about four or five other organizations in Sherman Park that I hadn't heard of until this morning.
If there was a way for these leaders of these different grassroots organizations to meet together and to share resources, I think we'd be able to address these questions a lot more efficiently. I think that we'd be able to consolidate these resources and maybe the investment in the community and probably have a more potent outreach. So if there's some sort of mechanism for these leaders to come together, I think that would probably be the best way.
And I believe that there are a lot of resources available, but part of what happens is the people that have those resources in their hand, they don't necessarily go out into the community to talk to people in the community. There's a reluctance to go out into the community with the programs and make people more aware of them.
Please state your name for me. And
David Muhammad, City of Milwaukee, Office of Violence Prevention.
And can you answer that question?
Sure, absolutely. I think what was said by Vaughn was critical. And in the presentation that was seen before, that traditional institutions have to be more responsive to the needs of the community. And that means removing barriers to access, that means retooling some of the things that have been done and making sure that they are informed and that those with the decision-making power for resources to be shifted to those services make that happen. But it does take a degree of community engagement in a way that has not happened up until incidents like what happened last summer.
Thank you.
So we're going to go next to Representative David Bowen. And I guess I'm going to ask you, are we doing any better here in Milwaukee? Have you seen any movement in the right direction in terms of getting people jobs and educations?
I think one of the things that I see is that it's becoming more and more clear of what is missing and the piece of systemic change, right? Being here almost a year later, knowing that the population that Seville Smith identifies and shows in this community really shows like the clarity of how much that population has been left behind out of opportunities systemically in this community, and that the movement to actually invest and to prioritize the lives of those young people, 20-somethings, in this community, and make sure that they have a place in the economy, that they have a place in their neighborhoods where they can also be treated with respect by the law enforcement agencies that should be there to protect and serve them as well, that we are still following up short to be able to fulfill what demands to really make that a reality.
Thank you. James?
Camille Mays, Sherman Park Community Association. What I would like to say is in response to the young man speaking about people working in silos, what we find often is that the people with the passion don't have the funding, and the people who have the funding don't have the passion.
P.V. Holmes from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And what's your question?
So my question is, I have the great pleasure of working for the greatest company in Milwaukee at Northwest Mutual. And from there, I know that we do a lot of with strategy and strategy maps. So I've lived here my whole life, and this has been a topic that I've heard my entire life. And at what point do we stop talking about it and start putting a roadmap together and hitting certain milestones? So I don't know what's the next steps for that, but I would love to see what our action plan is.
Would anyone like to respond to that? Anyone on stage or any of our VIPs in the first row?
In terms of action plans and things that are taking place, Milwaukee's got a lot of plans. The question is, when do the boots hit the ground and those plans hit the community? So currently the city of Milwaukee is undergoing the Office of Violence Prevention, Citywide Violence Prevention Plan. That's one plan that's taking place, but it's calling for alignment of other initiatives. And the community is the one that needs to be empowered with that information about what's happening in the city, where the resources are, and how those can be best aligned with where we want to see Milwaukee in 5 to 10 years. But it means having the community at the table instead of on the table in these discussions that take place often without the community.
Thank you. Jay?
I have another question. Please state your name and tell us where you're from.
Marquesa Tucker, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My question is, if we all pretty much know the problems and the issues in Milwaukee, my question is, when is the city of Milwaukee going to push resources into the solutions that are already present, like Programs in the Park and other grassroots organizations that are already out organizing and doing the work?
Good question.
I think one of the things that happens in these types of situations is there are resources in Milwaukee to do lots of things. It's not a matter of resources, it's a matter of priority. Where are we placing their priority in terms of the resources that are available? There's a lot of redevelopment happening around the city. We all see what's happening downtown and the money that's being spent in different parts of the city, but we're looking at some of the poor parts of the city and those same level of resources are not being placed into those communities. Those communities, I believe, in many respects, need those resources much more than they're needed in other parts of the city. But I don't think that we placed enough pressure on our elected officials to make that a priority.
I'd also like to add, I did recently hear that Common Ground is developing the area from Sherman Boulevard to 60th on Center Street. And I believe that they're starting with that track and field area outside of Washington High School. And Washington High School is going to match whatever fundraising is able to come in from the community to make that more of a community center, because there's a lot of walking clubs and kids that play there. So I do know about that initiative that's happening, which I live right off of Center Street. It's very exciting for me. So I do see that Sherman Park hasn't been ignored in all respects. I'm glad to see that some of the funding is moving toward Sherman Park.
All right, we will take more comments and questions a bit later in the program. Right now, though, we want to focus on some of the other positive efforts going on here in Sherman Park and beyond. In fact, as Liddy Collins tells us, Parklawn Assembly of God, where we are today, has led some key initiatives that bring healing and development to the area.
Cleaning up in Sherman Park shows one element of the Adopt a Block program that's out of the Parklawn Assembly of God. Youth and Community Outreach Minister Samuel Coleman said this is one of the church's ongoing youth activities, which is a response to what the community says the challenges are in the neighborhood.
Sometimes that's direct response things that we can do, like cleaning up, like bringing activities to the communities, back to school bashes where we provide students in the community with book bags and school supplies. Other times it's connecting community members to resources.
You live here. What are the needs in this community you feel?
Besides like cleaning up the community?
Yeah. How could we help you as a church?
I feel like our community needs to help people be educated.
Another project the church is involved with that played a role during the Sherman Park incident is the Declaration Project. This project, made up of area ministers, has been on the front line addressing community issues since the Dontre Hamilton killing in 2014. Bishop Walter Harvey, senior pastor of Parklawn Assembly of God, said this project continues to address some of the community's deep-seated issues.
The criminal justice system needs to be addressed. There needs to be a civic engagement and response, personal responsibility. There needs to be educational reform. There needs to be an economic development strategy. And those type of things have become pillars within the Milwaukee Declaration. And so every month there's a group of pastors that I'm meeting with here to strategize and to bridge those gaps and bring test scores up and close the income gap and close the education gap and restore marriages and families. So the Milwaukee Declaration is a red, yellow, black, white, brown collective group of Christian leaders that are really trying to bring a sense of heaven here on earth.
After the unrest in Sherman Park, the church shifted their staffing and vision, prioritizing the engagement of youth.
Not only addressing the children who are here, young people who are here, but you're also tasked with engaging the young people who are not coming to church. How can we go to where they are? And so we have changed our entire programming so that Wednesday night in this very space and in our gymnasium and in several other classrooms, 90% of the church is dedicated to the youth ministry on Wednesday night.
And they have let the neighborhood know they are there for the long haul.
After the Sherman Park unrest, there were a lot of groups that came in and then went away. But what our message is, and what our truth is, we've been here before the Sherman Park unrest. We've been there through the Sherman Park unrest, and we're still here, you know, after, and we will be continually.
It's time now to hear from some other key leaders in our community and our state. James Causey talked extensively with them about how we solve some of our problems.
We are, Milwaukee, southeastern Wisconsin, the second highest concentration of low-income people in a geographic area. In other words, 72% of this region's low-income people live in the city of Milwaukee. That's higher than every other metropolitan area in the country except for San Antonio. That presents challenges, and it presents challenges in the areas of employment, in housing, in public safety, and we as a city continue to address those issues. I think the jobs issue is a little confusing to people. I'm happy to report that our unemployment rate in the city of Milwaukee is probably at a 25-year low. Now, if you walk through the neighborhoods, you'd be shocked to hear that. And part of that is the wages that are being paid. And this is a statewide issue. Last year, wages were down in the state of Wisconsin. So some of this is how do we get the family supporting jobs and make sure that people can support their families. And that's one of the things that we're trying to focus on as well. I want people to be in the workforce, but I want them to be on a path where they can enter the middle class if they're not in the middle class already.
Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish feels that the state is doing its share.
Post Sherman Park, the governor said we need to deploy additional resources. He committed $4.5 million on top of what we had already designated as our Transform Milwaukee project. Now, $4.5 million was designed not just for entrepreneurial activities, but also job training activities. In addition to that, some of the mentorship activities that we know ultimately prevent violence and create healthy relationships. I think we should spend time in our areas where we have great potential. And that's what I see. When you've got a 3.1% unemployment rate statewide, then you know you need all hands on deck when it comes to filling the 100,000 open jobs we have. And yet you compare that to the African American male unemployment rate in Milwaukee, 21%, and you see potential.
She believes that we need to bring the unemployed to where the jobs are, like the Joseph Project does. But she also believes that we need to bring the jobs to where the unemployed are.
Like, why are people not moving toward the jobs they already have? And why are companies not moving within a city block of long-term unemployed? Those are both important questions that leaders and neighbors, community activists, people who provide education and health care should all be asking themselves.
Common Council President Ashante Hamilton believes jobs are an important part of the solution.
There's been an effort to create a pipeline of employment opportunities, economic development, and tie those opportunities directly to these neighborhoods. So we've did some particular outreach into specific neighborhoods to show how young men in those neighborhoods can get connected to the construction jobs, the boom that's happening downtown. So we've created a promise zones throughout the city where we're having direct outreach into those neighborhoods, both for youth and for adults to get training and get connected with transportation to jobs in the surrounding counties. Because a lot of the young people that were involved in the unrest didn't necessarily live in the Sherman Park neighborhood. They came from different areas around the city. So we have to recognize that it's not a problem, you know, that will be contained in any single neighborhood. It's some things that we got to do throughout the city.
State Senator Lena Taylor believes strengthening the relationship between the police and the community is important.
I think we need more things to encourage community police relationships. I saw something that an officer did most recently, starting an organization to help individuals who have a prior record to get jobs. We need more of that. Get out here and play ball with them or do something with them so that you can build trust. Next thing you know, they were out mingling with folks. So they were doing their job, but they were also building relationships. More of that has to happen for us to get past things that happened long before you and I were even born. And I would also argue that we can do different police style approaches that have proven to be more successful. In particular, cop houses have been done in Racine, which is basically take a foreclosed property and convert it into a building where it becomes a community center in a way, but it's also a place where the police are stationed out of, where in addition to that, maybe the probation agent is stationed out of, the inspectors in the city can go there to be able to do their reports. It becomes a community hub for neighborhood organizations to use. It could be a job center access point even.
Reggie Moore heads the mayor's Office of Violence Prevention. I asked him what has changed in the past year.
I think progress has been made in some areas in the sense that I feel like the community has come together a lot more in supporting each other and being more conscious about what's happening. I think what happened in Sherman Park forced people to ask questions that they hadn't asked before. I think the community had been asking those questions, but in my conversations with the philanthropic and business community, I think they started asking questions that at least were new to me in terms of being asked. And so I think when people started to look at Sherman Park was the iceberg, and I think people were really trying to inquire what was going on under the water that sort of led to the manifestation of that level of rage. And I think that has broadened the conversation, not only about public safety, but about unemployment, about housing, about what does it mean to have a safe and sustainable neighborhood. These are conversations that I think were happening in silos and also happening on a very grassroots and community level, where now I think people started to, whether it was driven by fear or other concern, started to recognize that what happens in one part of this city affects everybody in this city.
Another reminder, you can hear the entire interviews with Chief Flynn, the Lieutenant Governor, and other leaders by going to MilwaukeePBS.org. Right now, we want to continue our community conversation with the audience here at Park Lawn Assembly of God about jobs, housing, education, and other social issues. Again, please keep your comments brief and to the topic. Latoya Dennis and James Causey have been standing by in the aisles with microphones to help facilitate this next round of our community conversation. This time, we'll start with James. James?
Thank you. Homer Blow is here to give us his take on everything. Go ahead.
Homer Blow, program director, music director of WNOV, blowradio.com. One of the things that I heard a sister mention about the passion not being there, I think that some of our elected officials and other people need to utilize the ways that we have to cut through the red tape. So organizations like Program the Parks, the grassroots organizations, can get the funding without having to go through too many unnecessary hassles. Again, you see them doing the work that you can't do, they're doing. And I think it's important that we make it more accessible and we make some of the funding available for those kind of organizations. I think that a lot of the youth out here right now, they're not listening to people who ain't lived what they lived. If you haven't lived what they live, you don't know that. You're not hearing about the things that are going on at home. You're not hearing about these things. And I think we take these political positions and, well, you got to do this and you got to do that. If you want that change, you got to let the people that have it in their hearts a chance to make that proper change. So some of you elected officials got to put more into it and make those funds. They're available because if it was happening with heroin, guess what? There's going to be a program about it. But when it's happening with our people that look like me, all of a sudden, well.
Before you walk away, hey, good point. We often hear this a lot about the funding. You know, you have nonprofits fighting each other for that limited amount of funding. How do we get the funding to them, though? How do you do that?
Well, again, I've seen funding come and I see a lot of cute little carnivals and things like that. Where did that funding come from? Where they don't have the amount of people that some of these grassroots organizations are able to pull out and utilize that. They have tons of extra food, waste. They're wasting a lot of these things. Where we in here where these hungry people are, we're hearing their cries. We're seeing what they're going through. We're talking about the human trafficking and all of the abuses going on. There has to be a way to circumvent that. And I'm just saying that's where the conversation needs to happen. You got some people that may not have the college degree that some others have, but they got that passion to make things happen. And if we want to see a change, we have to make that change.
Thanks, Homer.
My name is Anthony McCarter. I am from, born and raised, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
What's your question?
My question pertains to, as my cousin Homer was stating, funding. But funding in the sense of creating more homeowners for the residents of the city of Milwaukee, since being a realtor, being a credit restoration specialist, I've worked with buyers who want to actually buy city-owned properties. But because of details such as scope of work, which can range from anywhere from $30 to $60, $70 more than the property themselves are worth, how can we increase opportunities for them to create stable communities by increasing the residents in them becoming homeowners?
We have someone over here.
Oh, we do.
Could you make your way? Expert. Yep.
Please state your name.
I'm Rob Kuzner from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I'm not the expert on this, but I am tangentially involved with this project. But there is a project just north of here where they are taking foreclosed properties, and they actually want to have homeowners for those properties. And I think that there is something that's ongoing. I think that it's there's some other initiatives associated with it that would really benefit the community. And but at the same time, I think the funding is slowing it down a little bit. But we do have programs in place, and we just need to keep going forward with them. We may need a little patience, but we also need to give them a little shot in the arm and just push forward, especially this renovation of the foreclosed properties.
Okay, thank you. The other thing that I'm struggling with is that the current state of where young people are in the economy in Wisconsin, in southeastern Wisconsin, we're talking about many of those young people being underemployed right now, right? And I would definitely agree that we definitely have to have the sustainability in our community so that those same individuals can have access to actually buy and afford to buy homes in our community. The problem is they aren't making enough to actually buy those homes and invest into them. We're talking about individuals that are making usually so low of pay that they're still dependent on government assistance, right? And how do you lift up those young people and those people that are underemployed systemically? That's why I kind of highlighted that earlier, but that specifically means that your tech college system has to be free, right? It means that it has to be afforded to everyone that needs access to it, to rip down those barriers that have been up for so long. That means that when it comes to actually instilling resources in our neighborhoods on a neighborhood level, that training, that education, it's very accessible. Right now, we have so many barriers that are still up. Those things that we would love to see are light years away that it feels like of what it would be truly accessible to the young people that we have.
Thank you.
Barry Givens, Sherman Park Community Association. I just wanted to make a comment regarding some of the funding that's available to the city. A lot of it, I mean, it never gets to the hit the ground. I mean, it never gets to the people that really need it. And you can't go out and try and solve some of these social problems from behind a desk. You've got to be out there, grassroots, talking to people, trying to organize, and those types of issues. Also, I just want to say, too, that Sherman Park is not Sherman Boulevard West. Sherman Park starts at 30th Street. So, you know, we can't ignore what's happening over on the eastern part of Sherman Park because sooner or later, it's going to come west. So we've got to deal with it. And unless we really put a genuine effort in, it's not going to improve.
Thank you.
My name is Rashawn Whitman. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I think I'd be remiss if I didn't speak to the fact that the silence of the majority, even in this room, is far more damaging than the actions of the minority in Sherman Park. I think that when we have safe spaces such as this, I think it's important to hear the perspectives of those who have historically, even if it has been unintentional, benefited from the plight that is plaguing the African-American community. I think it's important that they unpack that and get uncomfortable, because this is a safe space. So I just would love to hear a couple more people who belong to the majority help us, because they have great ideas, and I think that they're just not speaking. And I think that half of the issue of why those young people did what they did in Sherman Park is because they didn't feel like they had an advocate that was powerful enough to speak for them.
Thank you very much.
We are getting close to the end of our program, but before we wrap up, we want to hear about the efforts to spruce up homes in our communities. Common Ground is a community action group here in Sherman Park. It's a collection of residents and about 40 churches who want to maintain the beauty and sense of community in their neighborhood. Joanne Williams tells us about one of their programs, Milwaukee Rising, that's doing just that, one house at a time.
You can see and hear revitalization happening in many areas of Milwaukee Sherman Park. It might be putting on a new roof or something bigger, like the inspiration and work of real estate agent and Milwaukee Rising developer Randy Jones and his team of workers. He's taking me on a tour of a house built in 1928 that he's rehabbing.
And Joanne, you'll love this part. Lead glass windows.
Ooh, yes.
Both sides. Here, in the cabinet.
He's rehabbing the house on beautiful 51st Boulevard. Jones says it's been standing vacant and boarded up for 5 to 7 years. Just the type of eyesore that the Milwaukee Rising Project wants to bring back to life. Keisha Crum, lead organizer for the community action group Common Ground, explains.
The essence of the Milwaukee Rising Project was a strategy to bring back the housing market in Sherman Park after the foreclosure crisis of 2008.
There are other community groups in the area with a similar mission, but Milwaukee Rising, a project of Common Ground, has been at this for more than 10 years.
How many houses were foreclosed?
So when we started, we focused on the 120 blocks around St. Joe's Medical Center, and there were about 300 abandoned boarded up houses. And now we're down to about between 63 to 65.
Most of the houses were owned by 5 major banks: Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and the biggest, and the one that owned thousands of homes in Milwaukee and around the country, Germany's Deutsche Bank. Community members met with executives of the banks and convinced them to put money back into the neglected houses. That included buying stock in Deutsche Bank so representatives could participate in the stockholders' meetings in Germany and plead their case.
So we leveraged $33.8 million sustainable mortgages. But then in addition to that, there was about $900,000 in cash that we got to actually do the rehab work.
But Milwaukee Rising has made it work, due in large part to the persistence of Sherman Park residents like Toni Wagner. She's lived in the neighborhood for 46 years.
We got involved in Common Ground because my parish, St. Catherine's Parish, was one of the founding members in 2008. We need this in our neighborhood. We need to stabilize it. My church is on 51st and Center. My parish members are here. Oh, how else are we going to keep this neighborhood viable without having people involved?
And Common Ground has plans to soon expand the successful model of Milwaukee Rising into other neighborhoods.
Home ownership, or living where you want to, should be an American right. Unfortunately, it wasn't always that way. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Fair Housing Marches here in Milwaukee. And on Milwaukee PBS, we will have a special, Crossing the Bridge. It examines Milwaukee's civil rights struggle for open housing 50 years ago and today. Watch Crossing the Bridge, premiering August 23rd, a Black Nouveau special at 6:30 p.m. on Milwaukee PBS Channel 36. I want to thank all of our panelists, community and government leaders, segment producers, and production staff. And a special thanks to James Causey and Latoya Dennis. Also, thank you to our audience here at Park Lawn, as well as our Milwaukee PBS viewers, you at home, and our WUWM listeners. We want to extend a special thank you to Park Lawn Assembly of God for hosting us this evening. We will continue the conversation with our Park Lawn audience in just a bit. You can listen to that online at milwaukeepbs.org right after this program. Thank you all for being part of this community conversation. On behalf of Milwaukee PBS, I'm Portia Young, beyond Sherman Park. Thank you, and good night.